Welcome to Why Not Me, The World podcast, hosted by Tony Mantor. Broadcasting from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Join us as our guests tell us their stories. Some will make you laugh, some will make you cry. Real life people who will inspire and show that you are not alone in this world. Hopefully, you gain more awareness, acceptance, and a better understanding for autism around the world. Hi, I'm Tony Mantor. Welcome to Why Not Me, The World. Today's guest has two children that are autistic. She started a charity for autism and has so much information to give us. Joining us is Hope McPheeters. Thanks for joining us, Hope.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I understand that you have two children that are autistic. If you would, give us a little information about them.
Ella, she is 18 now, and Luke, he's 14. When Ella was two, we noticed something different, and we moved to Columbia, Missouri, because they were opening an autism center, the Thompson Center for Autism at the University of Missouri. Both my husband and I had gone to the University of Missouri, so we had talked to our pediatrician, and he mentioned something about autism testing, because she wasn't talking at age two, really wasn't imitating us, not doing too many, doing a little bit of echolalia, like echoing things, but really not conversation, no spontaneous conversation. And so they asked if we might want to go see the Thompson's, so a developmental pediatrician at the Thompson Center. So, and it was brand new at the time. It was like, it opened in 2006, and this was when Ella was two. So we moved. My husband was able to get a job because I was able to stay home with her if we moved to Columbia, and then we were going to have her tested because we kind of suspected something too, and we started doing the research. And so she was diagnosed at the age of two at the Thompson Center. And then Luke, and we got really involved with them and started doing therapy. And then I got pregnant 4 years later. And the Thompson Center went ahead and put Luke into a sibling study because at that time they were now seeing more families get double, triple diagnoses. So they were looking at a genetic component of autism because we were seeing so many. So that was, and so Luke was diagnosed when he was 16 months at the Thompson Center. And then from there, my family immersed themselves in the autistic community, the autism world, if you will. And we've been going ever since. So
when Ella was diagnosed as autistic, autism wasn't as predominant as it is today, and people didn't know about it. So what was your approach and how did you feel when you got that diagnosis? What went through your mind at that point?
Well, I mean, I will remember the date to the day. It was February 16th, 2006. She had literally just turned two in December. And I just started this huge search of knowledge because I didn't really know anything about it. She was a girl at the time. It was still kind of a boy predominant disorder. They were autism speaks at that time was even like 3 out of 4 boys get autism. And so I was like, how in the world did my 1 out of 4 be a girl, like my girl, get diagnosed with autism? And so I just didn't know a whole lot about it. So we worked really hard with the Thompson Center. I went to all the parent trainings. You know, we were very fortunate that we jumped on, that we just made the decision as a family to move to Columbia and be in a community that was studying autism.
Okay, so Ella's diagnosed. You start doing your research about autism. I've spoken with many people
that question themselves. Did I do anything wrong? Could I change anything I'd done during the pregnancy? Did anything like that go through your mind at the time that you could have done something different?
In the very beginning, I was like, what could I have done differently? I just don't understand. We didn't really have anything that we thought in our family, like in our family history, that looked like this. But then as I started to like kind of get to know my kid, I mean, I was just like, this wasn't my fault. I mean, you know, like I have a lot of moms, you know, do kind of go through that grieving process of like, what did I do? Why are we going through this? You know, and I've just kind of always been a positive person. So I just had to say, you know what, it is what it is. And, you know, like now all I need to do is focus on how I can help my child get through this.
Absolutely. I asked this question because I think that other women that may be hearing this podcast sometimes need to hear answers just like you gave.
Yeah. I mean, there's been just so much stuff, and there still is. It's kind of inundated on the web and on social media. You see these like class action suits that are like, did you take Tylenol when you were pregnant and have autism? Or, did, you know, like all these kind of certain things. There was a big push with like the vaccine, you know, like I just had to throw that all away. And then when I had my son, you know, I mean, it all came full circle because my son was diagnosed with autism earlier than Ella was diagnosed with autism. And I mean, I knew the signs right away. His pregnancy, I did everything different during his pregnancy. I was like, you know, stayed away from certain things that like people were, you know, insinuating, oh, this is might be a cause of autism. You know, like, I did everything different. I didn't vaccinate him right off the bat because there's really, you know, no reason to vaccinate him with Hep B and in its first shot. But I don't believe that that's the cause, but I just said, I'm going to space him out and see if that makes a difference. And It didn't make any difference. And, you know, Ella is my, you know, my higher functioning. I try to stay away from kind of some of the labels, but like a higher functioning. She's verbal. She just graduated from high school. She walked across that stage and got her diploma, you know. And my son is nonverbal still. He's 14. He has a lot of sensory issues and he communicates with an iPad. So they're just both very different on the spectrum, but, you know, I wouldn't go back and change anything that I did. And sometimes I think God gave me Ella so I could be a better mom for Luke.
So Luke's nonverbal. Did Ella go through that nonverbal stage? And having two autistic children, what were the differences in them growing up that you saw?
Well, I mean, Ella started talking. So she was nonverbal until she was about 4.5 or 5. We started ABA therapy and speech therapy. And we always knew Ella was smart. She was doing stuff. She was spelling at age 2.5. She would see words on Blue's Clues, you know, or like a cartoon. She would, you know, talk good at spelling. And we had these bath tiles and she would spell those words on the floor. And so she was really, you know, like we knew she was reading. We knew she was, and then we figured language would come.
So did language come the way that you was hoping that it would come?
They did come. Lots of therapy. We did lots of ABA and speech therapy with her. And it was kind of amazing because she was one of those kids that went from, I have a video of her that she said the first word she said was bubble. Because we were in therapy and we were blowing bubbles and I'm in the video with her because I was always trying to like be trained by the therapist so I could just continue to help her at home. And so I held the bubble wand up to my mouth and I wouldn't blow it until she said bubble.
So did you finally get her to say the word?
We had sat, I mean, there is times that we sat for a long time. And if she didn't say it, we would have to kind of give her up, or we'd have to make her sign it, or we would, we used like pecs where she would like point to a picture if that's what she wanted. And so then the first time she said it, she said bubble, and I just blew the heck out of the bubbles. And then later on, we have a video of her. We continued with therapy. One time, we same thing, like we had been swimming at the pool, and I'd walked her down home because we had a neighborhood pool, and I walked her down home in the stroller, and I strolled her in, and she literally, this was after the bubble incident, but she literally was like, "More pool, please." And I had to honor it. I had to turn that stroller around and go back to the pool because I just had to honor, you know, her voice. And so that was, and then the third video that we have her talking, she's like, "Mom, blow me bubbles, please." So her language went from like words to sentences in a matter of months, you know. And then we just realized how smart she was. And artistic, and she's a whiz at math. And so those were kind of, you know, the things that we focused on with her.
Oh, that's great that she turned around and you saw such a change. So what was the difference between her and Luke?
Now, with Luke, we heard a lot of babble from Luke, which we didn't hear from Ella. So it was interesting. He went about, let's see, till kindergarten, he went and he used a hex system. He did a picture system where he would communicate with picking pictures out and showing what he wanted and why not. He did pretty good about that. And that's when we got him an iPad. And then we realized he could read because he could read sight words on the iPad. And so now he uses a communication device for output.
So his communication now is primarily iPad. Does he verbalize at all?
Yeah, he can communicate pretty well through an iPad. He is able to verbalize some of it. Like he is able, if he touches, for example, like if he touches like chicken nuggets. So I want chicken nuggets. He can actually do the whole sentence. It's an icon and it's like and words, sight words. Like he can say, "I want chicken nuggets." And so we know he's reading, we know he's recognizing those words. And then he can output, like he would say like nugget, he can repeat some words after he's outputted it.
Well, okay, that's pretty interesting. So now what do you see for Ella's future?
Well, she has joined. So that's kind of my mission now. As my kids have grown, we started very early on with advocating for early intervention. And throughout this process, now we're advocating for more services for teens and adults, because we have found that in autism world, the little guys get a lot of services.
So it's around 21 that most age out for some of these services. Is that correct?
Well, not all. Like a lot of them age out at 18 of school. Like Ella aged out at 18 because she was not in, like I said. So my son, he's in a self-contained classroom and in more essential skills classroom. And so he will have the right to education until 21. Ella graduated, but she is going into the transition program for 1 year, which is employment skills, and she'll be working as an intern at Embassy Suites. And they're teaching her all of the ropes of all the jobs of the hotel. And she does that with 700 kids that are on the autism spectrum that she's been with in school.
So the big issue is finding programs that can help them along. Is that tough to find some of these programs?
There's not a lot of programs out there like that. And then after that, you know, it's kind of up in the air. So that's my mission now. I have since left the classroom. I was a French teacher until this year. And now I've left the classroom and I'm looking for autism support now, behavioral services. And I'm working on getting more programs for teenagers.
Now, before Autism Support Now, you actually had a charity of your own. Is that correct?
I did. That's 12 years ago, we started Ellis Hope for Autism, and we're still running that. We started in 2007, but we really grew it. And we were able to establish the nonprofit in 2011. And we really advocated because between the years of 2006 and 2000, probably about then 10 and 2010, insurance didn't cover a lot of therapies for autism. Yeah, so we did that so because we could help with the cost. We helped parents with the cost of therapies because a lot of times if the insurance wasn't covering it, people could not afford it. So we raised money for area local families. We also raised advocacy for them. And then we helped fight for the bill, the mandate. Missouri has a mandate where now insurances have to cover autism therapies.
So that's really good that you was on the front end of this so that you could help others and really build more awareness for autism.
We stayed really close with the Thompson Center. So, you know, they were the groundwork with it, with the legislation and with Governor Nixon. But we helped, as parents, we helped tell them what we needed. So we were a group of parents that went down to Jefferson City and talked to the legislation and said, we need speech, we need OT, we need ABA, you know, like these are the things that we need.
That's one thing I hear from everybody I speak with is that there is a need for the government to get involved and help autistic families deal with the things that they have to deal with insurances and just varied things for helping their children. So do you ever see that coming on a national level?
Oh, I wish it did. We were hoping that it would. Enough states are doing it. I mean, but it would be really nice to be a federal mandate. We write letters all the time for, you know, certain funding through, you know, Medicaid and whatnot. So we try, but it would take a special someone to get a federal one done.
So tell me a little bit about Autism Support Now that you're working on and what you're doing.
Autism Support Now is an ABA behavioral therapy clinic, but it actually, my husband and I actually co-founded it under our charity. And now it's not a nonprofit, but we have 9 clinics across the state of Missouri. We just want to help as many people as possible, as many kids and teens as possible. And so I have taken on the role of director of community engagement. And also a parent advocate because I do all the intake for parents. And so I'm giving them resources. I just talked to a parent today that lives in St. Louis, and I used to live in St. Louis, and her son was diagnosed, and we're going to get him into one of our clinics. But I was telling her about all the resources that I used to use in St. Louis, and she was just like, thank you so much. She's like, you know, this is the best conversation I've had since his diagnosis because I just don't know what I'm doing.
It's really tough for those just starting out and finding that their sons or daughters are autistic, I'm sure.
It's a marathon, it's not a sprint. You know, like you don't have to know everything at once. And, you know, like I said, call me anytime with a question and I will do my best to answer it because I've been advocating for my kids for, you know, 16 years. Ella was diagnosed it too. So I'm trying to incorporate that into the job.
What's the toughest part of the job? I know there's a lot of tough parts, but you're trying to help people. And what's the number one thing that you see on the list?
There's always a wait list. So many people need, I mean, like, so many people want the help, and it's just, we can't provide the help fast enough. And I mean, my heart sinks when I'm like, we have like a 2 to 4 month wait list, maybe longer.
Wow.
My heart sinks for these parents. And that's a hurdle probably across the board with ABA, with speech, with OT, with developmental pediatricians, even with diagnoses. There are parents out there waiting for a diagnosis and they can't be seen in a clinic for 6 to 12 months. And without a diagnosis, you just can't get services. There's just not a lot of resources out there.
So what do you do in that case?
I've been trying to give our parents that we have resources that I didn't have at the time that have been developed so well in the last 16 years, you know, like, because parents like us are the ones fighting for it. So, you know, I look for the online resources. We, you know, like, there's toolkits out there. I'm like, parents, you just need to get on every wait list you can. And it doesn't matter if it's ours or if it's been, you know, neighboring. I try to refer people to places that, you know, like, that maybe they can get in faster. It's just, I know the parents want the help now. And we just, you know, like, it breaks my heart sometimes when we just can't provide it.
And that's really sad because so many people need the help. And there's so many people out there that really want to help. And the people just don't know what to do. It's tough for everybody.
There's a lot of hardworking people doing it, but it's just really hard to find sometimes. And a lot of, you know, a lot of states, more rural areas, they're even in, you know, kind of worse conditions because, you know, there's just not enough resources in small towns, especially around our area. Like, we're in Kansas City. We're in a pretty, you know, big city. And so we have lots of area resources, but we put a clinic in Platte City, which is a small, you know, small town, and there's just, it's limited. And, you know, those are the longer wait lists.
Okay. So now let's switch to the school systems. How has that changed and how did it work for you with Ella and your son?
I think everybody's experience is different. I mean, my kiddos had a great school experience. They were both on individualized educational plans. They had a team of people that were and still are, you know, I call them Team Luke and Team Ella. I was pretty adamant about what I wanted into their IEPs, into their individualized education plans. And so I was kind of that mom. I hear from parents that some parents struggle just depending on the school district or what the needs are, because sometimes the needs can't be met at the school. And that's a problem, you know, like, that's a problem. And sometimes schools aren't staffed or equipped enough for some levels of autism. So sometimes they have to go for some outside help.
Did your kids have any issues like in high school, like some do? How was their experience there?
High school was pretty good, but to be fair, I was a high school teacher at the school Ella was at. I mean, not a lot of parents get that inside kind of connection. I was very, but we did have a few incidences, but I tried to use those kind of incidences as more of an education. We deal with some anxiety, and that was really like kind of the heart of the behaviors at school. Like, she would get anxious, and I don't know if kids would bully her, but they didn't understand her behavior. So, you know, I mean, like, I mean, they would just kind of not get at her space, and like, and they would kind of back off. And whereas she wasn't meaning to be that way. She's, you know, they thought she was kind of rude at one point. Like, a couple kids thought she was rude. And I was like, you know, and I kind of use that as an educational like platform to be like, well, that's just kind of because she's a very abrupt person. Like, she'll just say what she thinks because there's no filter with autism sometimes. So I kind of educated them on that. She got, and she's autistic. And then, you know, like, most of the kids that at least I saw her interact with were really nice, but I know it goes on.
So how did you find the school system for Luke?
Luke is a little bit different. He kind of is protected in his like essential skills, self-contained classroom. We don't worry about him going to the high school, but, and he had a fabulous middle school experience, but it was because of the teacher. And so we were really blessed. And so, you know, like, everybody's been, I know everybody's experience is different. And I know there's probably a lot of people out there listening that are like, we did not have that experience, you know, like, and I feel for them because I know that I have been very lucky.
Now, I've talked with some parents that tell me that their kids tend to go into what I like to call their comfort zone. And that could be their room or wherever they go to just be by themselves. Do you have that issue at all?
If Ella could be by herself most of the time, she probably would be perfectly happy. But I don't let her. Even as it's interacting with me or dad or, you know, like we go on a walk or whatever. And so when, especially now when she's an adult, she is an adult. And so social activities for her are, you know, we've sought them out. We are in a program at KU Med, that's called Girls Night Out. And it's specifically for, girls on the autism spectrum, and they do community events and she does classes with them. And so like they just went to the zoo last week and, you know, about 15 of them spent the whole day at the Kansas City Zoo together, and they were socializing, and they have people that provide some instruction or some, you know, social skills with them.
Now, we've evolved into a world of computers, so that's a huge thing now because everybody communicates and socializes on that. Has Ella done a lot in computers? Do you see that helping her out as well?
She loves computers. She's a whiz. She likes to make videos. She's actually like a YouTuber. I don't understand it at all.
I can relate to that.
They're very into their videos, and she creates videos on GoAnime or Rian, and she puts them up on YouTube. And you know what? It's actually been really great. She has a whole community on YouTube.
Awesome.
They interact. They interact and comment. And to me, that's not isolating. That's actually communicating with people. So find that strength. I mean, because I was like, okay, well, as long as you're safe online, you know, like as long as I tend to keep an eye on it, you know, because online is kind of scary for our kiddos because they're trusting, but
right.
But I kind of keep an eye on it. But I realized that she's socializing and she loves to post to Instagram and people comment, and you know, like, and I'm like, that's socialization. That's not isolation, you know. So nowadays, and especially since COVID, like we were all online, you know. So really, like that. Is kind of her, you know, like kind of a way to not think that she's isolating.
Yeah, that's just so great. You know, this has been just so great because we've talked about so many different subjects and the school system and everything. And it's just too bad that we can't actually get more integration and teach more understanding in schools to those that aren't autistic, to understand those that are.
Yeah, and I love that because I think there was like an old saying, like we teach our kids to interact with typical kids, but why aren't we teaching the typical kids how to interact with our kids?
So true.
You know, we have to blend our kids into that world, but, you know, it would be nice to see more change, that more inclusion and more, you know, more typical people, you know, coming into our world.
Yes, absolutely. I've got to say that this has been a tremendous conversation. The biggest thing that I've really enjoyed about talking to you is the fact that you have so much knowledge because you're part of not only the autistic community and having two children that are autistic, but you also have a charity and you help others as well. So I really want to take and bring that into perspective in ending this and telling about the challenges and the things that that you tell people when they first find out they have a child that's autistic.
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming. In fact, this week I've talked to several moms. Again, just several moms that just got diagnosed, like 2 to 3 year old kiddos. And what I do tell them is I say the marathon is not a sprint. You do not have to know everything or do everything now. You can, you know, like decide on what you would, if you think ABA is going to be something that you want, you know, get on some wait lists, look into speech, look into OT, you know, and then I do send, I have several resources that I send them. And then I just say, find a support group. There's a bunch of support groups online, like on Facebook, on social media. Honestly, I joined a Kansas City Autism Spot Facebook group when in 2011. That's when I got on Facebook. And, you know, they were already for me then. And I got on there, I don't know, maybe not 2011, but a couple years after that. And I interacted with other moms. And I was like, we just shared all of our experiences. And that, for me, that has been why I have actually, like, kept going. Like, my normal became the autism community.
Just great information. So in ending this, I think I have one more question. Do you have any outgoing words of wisdom for all the people that are listening today?
Oh, just don't give up on them. I mean, it is a totally different world, you know. Find their strength, find their, you know, be their voice if they don't have one. You know, at times do get tough. It's really hard, I know. But, you know, we just made a pact that we would never give up on our kids, and we would always continue to make sure that they are happy and healthy. And they are happy and healthy. You know, like, I mean, they just need a little extra support, and, you know, you'll find it out there. I mean, you just have to look for it.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you again for coming on, because you've given so much solid, good information for people to listen to. And I feel like we only touched on some of the subjects that you could really help people on. So thanks again for coming on.
Well, again, thank you for having me. I look forward to listening, and it's going to be really fun.
Yes, I've truly enjoyed it. It was my pleasure. And thanks again. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to our show today. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. If you know anyone that would like to tell us their story, send them to tonymantor.com. Contact, then they can give us their information so one day they may be a guest on our show. One more thing we ask, tell everyone, everywhere, about Why Not Me, the World, the conversations we're having, and the inspiration our guests give to everyone, everywhere, that you are not alone in this world.